future is now. And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I will be your host for the next 15 minutes. Well, scratch that. Today's episode is going to have a slightly different twist. There's been a lot of hype in London regarding STOs. There's been a lot of events. And today, there was an event titled Security Tokens Realized, the inaugural summit on security tokenization. So Shane Kehoe, co-founder of SVK Crypto, actually went to go speak on a panel there today. So what I have for you in today's episode, we're bringing you the panel live from the event earlier today on tonight's show. That's right, we're quick to execute and we are quick on the turnaround. So before getting into that, here's what's been going down in the last 24 hours. Poland grants licenses to CoinQuista and BitClue. So the Polish Financial Supervision Authority, Komisja Nadzoru Finansowego, you have to forgive my pronunciation there, abbreviation is the KNF, has licensed two crypto startups as payment providers. Big news for Poland. ABN AMRO introduces crypto storage service. So ABN AMRO, a bank based in the Netherlands, has recently launched its storage infrastructure for digital assets. The financial institution has announced that 500 clients have already subscribed to the new service, which is still in testing mode. It's great to see that come through, especially from a respected bank. Leaked images show Galaxy S10 has a crypto wallet. So Samsung's long-awaited anniversary edition of phone, the Galaxy S10, may indeed feature a cryptocurrency wallet. The Extra has been subject of much debate and speculation of newly leaked images on social media appears confirmed this functionality has been added. So you have to wait and see. Also here on our side of the earth, the UK regulator came out and said utility tokens are not subject to securities law, which is super, super interesting. I know they're going to be bringing out more kind of clarity on the subject itself. This was initial guidance on digital assets themselves. So with that in mind, let's get down to business. Let's get down into today's show. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. It brings a smile to all of our faces here at SVK Crypto. I want to say a big thank you to all of you. And that's right, all of you, all the listeners who have subscribed already. Subscriber growth has gone through the roof. We're so, so grateful and thank you for all that you guys are giving to us. But if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. Let's get into the audio. It's a little bit quiet. I've boosted it up as much as I have, so turn the headphones up and let's get into this.
Focused on token finance and investment, we've got a really interesting panel. A group of people from various facets, various dimensions of what we're going to be talking about. First of all, I'm David Pleasance. I've been a longtime senior partner at Deloitte with a management consulting background. I'm currently focused on the digital space, cryptocurrency, tokenization, and have an investment business. I'm on the board of Tokeny, and this is an area of focus and interest for me. So maybe I could start by just asking each of the panelists to make a brief introduction. You already have bios for our various panelists, but just to start things off, maybe I could just go down the table and ask each of you to make a brief introduction.
Certainly. So I'm Damon Bell. I'm currently at Mint Partners. I've been there about 9 months. Primarily, I work on traditional assets and currently working on traditional assets. But within the business development space, one of the asset types that we're looking at is this whole digital crypto blockchain technology.
Alexander Azoulay, I'm a managing partner for FGH Capital. We are based in California in Europe. 2 years ago, we looked into listing our group of funds on Euronext and other listed markets in Europe. And we spotted the blockchain as a real opportunity to make it simple, more simple and streamlined, to list and make our venture fund accessible to more people. We will launch in end of Q1 19 our first tokenized fund from Luxembourg and from the US. So we chose to work with local regulators in major venues in Europe. That will be end of Q1.
Hi. George Salapa, I'm a co-founder of Body Credit. It's a Swiss fund, and our mission is to open venture capital, which we think is a very exciting asset class to a much much greater audience of investors. And we want to do it by allowing people to buy a small stake in our fund and then sell it or hold it if they like.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. I am the founder and CEO of Cointelligence. We conduct data research and analysis for the crypto economy. We're mainly focused on ICOs, STOs, coins, and exchanges. I myself have a background as an angel investor for the last 10 years. And about a year and a half ago, when I discovered blockchain and crypto, I understood that it's the future for all of us. And started to follow the industry, and I understood that there's significant problems and gaps. And we, as a part of what we did, we developed an impartial rating system for ICOs. We shifted that rating system into STOs because of the market change. And the last thing that we're also doing is hunting down scammers. Everyone that is trying to scam the public, there's many different types of scams. We identify them, and we are calling them out.
Good morning, everybody. First of all, thank you so much for allowing us to speak at this wonderful conference. It's great to see more attention on the STO market. It's been a wonderful conference, very well organized, and it's a real privilege to be asked to be here. My name is Shane Kehoe. I'm the co-founder of SVK Crypto. SVK Crypto is a firm based here in London. We are solely focused on cryptocurrencies and blockchain technologies. We put our capital to work with regards to our fund, which is a $50 million fund. We're in partnership with Block One, which are the guys behind the ESIO protocol. We see the opportunity right now as it exists as the biggest opportunity I've seen in the last 20 years. Of course, it's not going to happen overnight. We've got a 10-year view, but we've never been more excited to deploy capital into this amazing space, and it's wonderful to see the space becoming more mature with the evolution of the STO market.
Great. Thanks, everyone. And with that last comment, maybe we can start with some of our discussion topics. So we're seeing a shift in focus and priority from ICOs to STOs. So, An, maybe we could start with you, and you could give us some of your perspectives around what's the difference between ICOs and STOs, why are STOs gaining in popularity? So maybe we could start with you, please.
Sure, thank you. So the first part I would say is that we've all seen that with the ICOs, and that we had a wild, wild west. Everyone practically did anything that they want to do. People asked for investments from investors without enabling the investors to have any kind of real rights. We had cases where the founders were promising the moon. It was very clear that they will not be able to even reach their first milestone. They were raising millions, tens of millions, more than $100 million and more. And it was very clear that, one, they will not be able to achieve what they're promising. And two, the investors are completely hopeless. I think that the main change that we see from ICOs to STOs is first and foremost the security of the investors to have the rights. Second, the second part is I think that because of the change from utility tokens to security tokens, and when I say change, I'm talking about something that doesn't really exist at the moment or is very rare, because until today, no one, at least not someone that I know, any individual or company, actually managed to prove that utility token is worthwhile. There are a few projects that are looking promising to me, but it's a long way before they will be able to actually achieve it or prove it as a use case. The third part of the change that I see is because we know that with STOs, the security of banks and governments will be much better. They will feel much more comfortable with that mechanism. And I think that it will allow many of the investors that did not go into blockchain and crypto until now to consider it. The last part, the way that I see it, is that the confidence of the public might come back to the industry, might be back, because there's going to be many less scams out there. It's going to be much harder for them to scam the public. And when I mentioned scams before, we have different kind of levels of scams. There are scams that are just out there trying to steal the money from the public by faking a website, faking a company, faking the whole team. But there's other types of scams of founders lying about many different factors regarding their ICO, and now it will be an STO, and they will have serious problems with the governments, with the regulators, if they will be lying about these types of the different data that they publish to the public. And just one, as one example, I'll give many founders that we've seen say that they raised, for example, $10 million and more, while they didn't even raise $1 million, just as one example. Another example is that many founders are putting partners on their websites claiming that they have partnerships with big 500 Fortune companies such as Google, Microsoft, IBM, and more, while it doesn't really exist. So I don't think that founders of STOs will allow themselves to do these kind of things, because they will definitely go to jail. It's not a question. So that's the general overview of how we see the shift from ICOs to STOs. And obviously, if I had more time, I'd continue talking about it more. Thank you.
Anyone else like to add some comments to that?
Well, in many ways, it was a catch-me-if-you-can phase early on in the market. People were kind of whitewashing utilities for equity. And now you see companies swapping utility tokens for qualified financial instrument tokens. So they're kind of rushing to whitewash what they've done last year or 2 years ago for the most serious projects. And obviously, we'll see this trend going on for the next years, and I agree that it will be long, I mean, to educate the market and to switch from a wild, wild west, which you just mentioned, to a structured market where, like any financial instruments, you would have to comply with local regulation.
And Shane, from an investor's perspective, what have you seen as some of the differences?
Well, I think they're totally different. The ICO market was almost like a crowdfunding 2.0. It was an opportunity to invest, if you wanted to take that level of risk and volatility, into a conceptual, into an experiment, into a white paper, which was majority of times quite poorly written. Remember, this wasn't a prospectus from Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley. Every line was not okayed and verified by a legal representative of the firm. You were getting into something that was an idea. And in some cases, it worked. In the majority of cases, it didn't. You take the risk. You want returns. All trees do not grow to the sky. That market decoupled for obvious reasons. There was no filter with regards to quality control. But it had to happen. And for that reason, we have matured. We have looked at that space. We have looked at the underlying technology, which I'm really, really, really interested in. And now we are applying that to a regulated market. We're applying that to the tokenization of everything. We're applying that to equities, bonds, fractional ownership, property rights. That's exciting. That's very, very exciting. And I think when you really look at the space of where we are, it's nascent, right? Like it's right at the very early stages. Of course we're going to make mistakes. Of course we're going to think that the industry will go in a certain way and it could pivot. But we've started, and that's what's important. The tech is solid, we're very early stages, and it's very, very exciting. It's going to be interesting to see if it comes out more from the institutional type side or if it comes more out of the tech side. But we've got a better way to do things. But as I said, there is some major hurdles, and I think some of my panel have talked about already, the custody solutions, the compliance, the AML, the KYC, the secondary trading, and we'll probably get onto all that in the legal and regulatory framework. But the good news is that we've started. We have a vision. And when we have a vision, then we can make a decision and we can move on.
Yeah. And it would seem that, you know, what you're describing, you know, the structure and the discipline coupled with the regulatory underpinning, you would expect that that would give this staying power, and which is great to see.
I just read this interesting thing about 17th century and how people invented this great thing, which was called initial public offering. And
People started raising money for various things, from insurance, which actually made sense, to devices that were supposed to change chicken into sheep. And then it went into crazy bubbles like Mississippi bubble in France and so on. And I think there is this big fear now that ICOs will just transform into something else. So we're trying to call it, people are trying to call it STOs now, but the objective is the same, to raise capital. I think in many spaces, especially where assets are very liquid, like stock shares, tokenizing them will make sense in future, but maybe right now it would only make them slower or worse, less liquid. But for other assets, for real assets, the tokenization, which is really just splitting it into smaller pieces and making it, you know, it possible that that retail investors or people at large can participate, can buy a piece of something they like, is pretty profound and really does make sense, especially in closed industries like private funds.
Okay, so let's shift to another topic and focus the rest of our discussion on STOs. So, George, you know, perhaps we could talk a little bit about the different types of STOs and the application, you know, whether it's real assets, financial instruments, funds. You know, maybe you could comment on the merits, where you're seeing early momentum, some of the trends. You know, is this going to be a new asset class that people focus on in terms of their investment portfolio?
Yeah, well, I think there were a couple of pioneers last year and maybe the year before who came up with the I think very very good idea to tokenize or represent ownership of a private fund like venture capital on blockchain. And these were a couple of really great pioneers like Spice VC, for example. And I see that more and more people are looking into this space and are trying to do it. And I think that it actually really does make a profound sense because the venture capital sector is a very exciting sector. And I think that many people would like to participate. Many people would like to invest in a venture capital fund. Who would not like to, you know, have a go at maybe owning the next Facebook? But at the same time, it's really a domain for the ultra rich, for the few tycoons. And I think this should be democratized. It should be open to more people. And I think splitting venture capital into smaller pieces and allowing you know, broader or larger group of investors to participate is quite profound. What I also think is that venture capital, and maybe this is in a way untold story, is a lot about creating the network effect, creating the kind of, let's call it a community effect, whereby really venture capitalists is only as successful as large his deal flow is, as many opportunities they can turn down and really find and look for the best ones. And I think by tokenizing, by having a broader and larger group of investors or LPs that are backing you, you can achieve this. So I think I really do believe that tokenization makes a strong underlying sense for private fund sector like venture capital, for example.
I would agree with that, and certainly coming from the venture capital background like we are, and we're deploying capital into the space. However, the majority of meetings that I go into, and it's a little bit like what I've recently seen with Jeff Bezos' first million that he raised for Amazon. He did 66 meetings, and he raised about $1 million at a $5 million valuation for Amazon, approximately $50,000 each. And each meeting that he went into in 1995, every person asked him, so what is the internet? And it's unbelievable. What is the internet? And every meeting that I go into, the amount of people that ask me, so what is this thing called the blockchain? And it's true. So when you're looking at actually taking in LPs into your venture capital fund, the majority of people out there are still, and I'm talking about real capital allocators, fund of funds, family offices, high net worth individuals. The role that we tend to take a lot of the time is educating. And I think if we were to put a tokenization layer on the fund at this stage, it might be somewhat more complex. I definitely see the advantages of it going forward. I think it opens up the gates. It allows you to take capital. It allows you to have it in smaller pieces. People say liquidity, although I'm not too sure how that would work because a venture capital firm, certainly like ours, we're closed-ended with a seven-year view. So I'm not too sure how that would work with regards to secondary trading. However, my point being is that we are now in a situation where we are educating, we're explaining, we're getting people up to speed about this opportunity. Not everybody sees it like we do. And I really like that, because for me, that's an opportunity to be factually right and look back at the space in 10 or 20 years and have called it right, or look back in 10 or 20 years and go, wow, that was some wild ride we were on. What the hell were we thinking? So it allows you to be factually right or wrong. But I think history will look kindly on what we're doing. But I think it's a little bit early days. But I love to educate. And that's why at SVK Crypto, we do so many things for the community. And I think it's really important to give back and educate. We're all in this together.
I couldn't agree more with Shane. Sorry, I'm just going to... Blockchain is really it's a toxic asset, because it's very it's very exciting, but it's very, really complex. It's not intuitive, so it's hard to understand for people. And that's why the ICO bubble happened. But I think that if you want to be the pioneer, you have to start somewhere. And I think that tokenizing something that is wholly illiquid right now is a little bit of an improvement. And that's why, if you do it right and the right, in the right jurisdiction according to law and rules, then it's maybe the right step forward.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just going to add to Shane's piece that you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, I'm from a traditional brokerage. And any interaction we've had, it seems that the educational piece would have all been done by the likes of yourself. But traditional methods of raising capital is still, you know, is still quite appealing to those blockchain companies. And I think we'll go through a phase, certainly at the beginning of this year, and certainly into the middle of the year at least, where although there's every intention to tokenize an asset at a later stage, initial period of capital raising is still taking some traditional measures and some traditional methods.
If I may, Ed, I do agree with everything that's been said. It's not so common, actually. But I do agree. I would like to add that what we've seen with ICOs is that self-regulation doesn't work yet. Maybe it will in the future. Maybe ICOs will return. There's no doubt that ICOs are dead right now. But the main factor, in my opinion, is that with STOs, there's no doubt that we need regulation. And we've been saying it all along for the last year. But I do think that the regulators have to consider the fact that if they will not take the same securities laws, but will make adjustments and make them relevant for STOs, and I'm talking specifically about the fact that the tokenization can be a huge deal. I am a big believer in the liquidity in the market, and I do think that we will see in 2019 security token exchanges working properly or starting to work properly on the right way. But the regulators have to make these adjustments, otherwise it will kill the market. And as mentioned before, this is not supposed to be just for the rich or the tycoons. This is supposed to be for the public to finally be able to take part in investments that were not possible for them before. And it doesn't matter that we're shifting from ICOs to STOs, we have to make sure that everyone can participate, at least in some way.
Okay, so let's talk about secondary trading for a few minutes. Alex, could you give us your thoughts around what market requirements there are to support STO growth, you know, looking at traditional versus non-traditional channels, what potential growth limitations we might have. You know, what sort of secondary trading needs to be in place for this to build momentum?
Yeah, I mean, to the points we mentioned before, issuing tokens not to be traded doesn't make any sense. I agree on the fact that if any company tries to raise capital by issuing tokens just for the sake of it, without having a plan for liquidity, it may not work, and that will bring us back to the ICO market. So secondary exchanges are critical now, and there are none in the EU for now. I'm being very clear. The Zurich Stock Exchange FIX issued a statement 5 months ago. Stuttgart, the same thing. It's still in the making, and we don't even know when they will be operating for sure and being able to list tokens. ATSs in the US, you have a couple of them operating under SEC in America. but still very, very low volumes, and only two or three operations have been completed in Q4. So what we see is that secondary exchange are critical to so the market could really mature in the coming month or years. We hope it will be month. And we agree that 2019 will bring a real change. If we take the case of France, where we are based, there is a law coming up, the Loi Pacte, which is one of the first law creating a status for broker-dealers and crypto assets and custodianship. This law will come in force in March, and we think it will create a set of rules that other countries in the EU will replicate or get inspiration from. We see two main challenges when setting up a secondary exchange. The first is RegTech. I mean, we know that now crypto assets were in a white space in some ways. ESMA, the European financial regulator, says, we don't know. I mean, crypto assets have no status. Shares, bonds, shares of funds are financial instruments. What are crypto assets? So today, the minimal risk we can assume is that it is a financial instrument that MiFID and MiFIR will apply to crypto assets, real estate, shares of funds, shares of companies. That being given, we know that we have to submit any exchange to the MTF rules in Europe, which are really heavy, too heavy, which gives legacy players, Nasdaq, Euronext, maybe ICE in the States with BACT, which was actually launched in Q4, it gives them an edge in the market. So you see legacy players playing catch up slowly and possibly bringing more liquidity. And liquidity beyond RegTech is the other critical aspect. How do you create liquidity when you start an exchange from day one? You're going to wait years before you have the depth required to trade your tokens. So you're going to be stuck with STO token, with STOs for years. So what's the point? So we see a real challenge in setting up the infrastructure. Again, STOs without exchanges do not make sense for us. And hopefully the EU will catch up. I mean, there is a sandbox in the UK, which is very limited and not quite public. People are trying. So the last interesting aspect of exchanges, once they will be set up, is discovery. What if smaller funds, smaller companies you have never met, who are amazing actually, could list on these exchanges, and you may be able to build your portfolio seamlessly on an exchange? That's the first consequence of exchanges, transparency and liquidity. And obviously, you could imagine having ETFs of funds, ETFs of real assets down the road. So I agree, we are just early in the curve of a new generation of asset management. Half of all assets are liquid. What if just a bit of that, will move to the blockchain, was liquid? It will open up arbitrage strategies that are unknown for now, in funds, companies, and bond funds as well. So that's where we are now, and hopefully when we come back next year for the next conference, we'll have an exchange set up in the EU. We hope so.
I mean, to add to that, and to look, you know, if we consider the current asset management market in traditional assets, you know, realistically, and any marketing people out there will tell you that you need a two-year number. You need a two-year performance number to sit in front of someone and say, this is my fund, this is how I've performed. So, you know, would you expect it to be a shorter time span than that two-year number to create performance? Or would you just align it to a current model which is out there to attract investors?
Well, in our case, I mean, we are kind of a legacy venture capital fund. We've been investing for the last 6 years, so we have a 6-year track record. We never expected to raise capital through an STO. I agree. We go on typical roadshows with typical investors, and we're trying to educate them about blockchain and the impact of blockchain on our business. How do we become better managers? How do they get liquidity or more transparency on the investment? So I agree. I don't believe that you can cut corners. Any funds who have limited track record will have a hard time raising capital and trading to their NAV. That's why I think, as a paradox, and we love innovation and groundbreaking innovation, fortunately or unfortunately, legacy players are going to have a say in the market in the coming month. And that's, I think, it's the right way to go. I mean, it's we can't really go from a greenfield from day one. It's still finance, and it's still regulated finance. And we tried, people tried to escape it. But there is no escape from it.
What we've seen just on the exchanges side, we've seen a lot of movements behind the scenes. Some has actually come out into the news. We're seeing more positioning with almost like, obviously, regulated exchanges for STOs. And I know Archax are here today. I think they're one of the sponsors, which are based in London. Graham is one of the head guys over there. They're doing a phenomenal job of getting launched. I think in the next very short period of time, we have Open Finance and T0. Both regulated exchanges coming online. We've also noticed that there has been a kind of a full service suite offering. And when I start to see Coinbase invest into Securitize, and I also start to see other platforms like TokenSoft being invested into and partnering up with Coinbase, it's looking like they're trying to work out from the actual launch of the ICO token all the way to exchange, so the issuance platform joining with the exchange platform, where there can be a KYC and AML embedded into that process. So therefore, when you're issuing the STO, that you actually have an exchange to actually launch it on, and this will be important for liquidity. I totally agree with our panel. If you don't have an exchange to launch it on, I think that you're doing yourself a disservice and your investors. But we're starting to see that kind of M&A movements and positioning within that structure, and that's very much welcome, but very much at the start also.
So, Shane, you know, that perhaps is a segue to another question around collaboration. I mean, what you mentioned there might perhaps suggest that for this to build momentum and for it to work, businesses need to think about collaboration. So between issuers and exchanges, between investment banks, fund managers. I mean, do you see that collaboration and alliances, partnerships are going to be critical? They're going to be different. How do you see that playing out in terms of all this fitting together?
Oh, I absolutely. It's a fragmented market space, and in order for us to have a platform, a regulated asset class, which needs institutional capital to come into it, just like we've seen in the equities and the bonds and the property market, there has to be collaboration, there has to be standards set, there has to be the correct type of institutional type KYC and AML. There needs to be the auditors, the legal teams. There also needs to be, from a point of auditing, which you can't have self-custody. Your auditor, when you go out to raise capital, or you've already raised existing capital, you have to have an auditor do your NAVs. You have to have an auditor step in to prove what you have. Nothing is more difficult than saying to someone that you have a digital token. The auditor really needs to be able to talk to a third-party custodian. The third-party custodian needs to sign off on what tokens you currently hold and the value of those tokens for your investors. So for in order for that to happen, collaboration needs to occur so that everybody can all have the same type of ethics and standards to move forward. And I don't see any pushback on that. I think everybody is in a growth and learning phase, and I think everybody's open, and especially the lawyers in the room. They love to come in and bill you and learn from you rather than advise you. They always love telling you what I can't do rather than coming up with a solution what I can. So, and the City of London, whereby I hope there's some lawyers in the room today, you guys are going to make some really big bucks on this thing, so stick around. You might get to learn something for today. But I think it's welcomed in all serious from all the professionals involved, and we will find ways to solve the problems when we all come together and actually discuss what the requirements are needed.
Great.
I was just going to add that I agree with Shane and Alex, and I think that I didn't actually know about the French regulation, but it's very interesting, and I think that there is really starting to be a difference between countries. So in some countries, you really have to pay lawyers to tell you what they don't know and what they know. And then there are countries like Switzerland, for example, which has started early and has defined quite clear guidance. So in other words, you can go online and download a PDF rather than call a lawyer. And that's a big difference. So I think it's starting somewhere there.
So Damon, could you comment on the requirements to facilitate institutional-grade infrastructure for the complete life cycle of a transaction, and you know what developments and trends you see related to institutional trading?
Sure. So as throughout this panel session, a lot of my fellow panelists have touched on, you know, we are seeing great developments. We are seeing great strides in moving forward what would be needed to create an institutional-grade environment. And I'm coining a phrase from who I am at Archex there, so I apologize, but an institutional grade life cycle. And in the traditional space, we talk about the front to back process. And, you know, for me to sit in front of one of my clients, and my clients will vary from investment banks, when I say my clients, my company's clients, from investment banks all the way through to high net worth individuals with pension funds alike in between. If I'm to talk them through the life cycle of a transaction, it starts at the beginning. It starts at the exchange, at the trading platform. You know, it starts with them understanding that members of that platform are abiding to a set of rules, a set of obligations that they need to, that are required by a regulator. It would be using technology that allows a correct surveillance and monitoring process to ensure that the trading on that platform is fair, is roles and responsibilities for certain liquidity providers, for certain participants. We then have the second phase, which would be clearing and settlement. And we're probably at a stage where the clearing and settlement for a tokenized asset is probably has greater security than the current methods for traditional assets in non-exchange traded instruments such as a bond or so that's already in place. But then you get the third step, which would be safekeeping custody. And again, we've touched on it down the panel. And there are plans for new entrants to be coming in from Von Sobel in Switzerland announced 2-3 weeks ago that they was going to be making an offering or create an offering. This needs to continue. We need to see custodians of the type that the world's biggest pension funds are familiar with, are used to looking after their assets. You know, it's all very well making an investment decision, but to make an investment decision and then not know if you're going to get your money back or not is not really what we can encourage people to do. You've then got the again, what Shane touched on, you've then got the valuation. A valuation on a fund is critical. If you're going to encourage people to invest in a product that will value daily, you want a reference point being fair, being clear and being transparent. And then it leads us all the way back to the other side of the coin, which is you've got to be confident and comfortable that you own something that you can dispose of should it reach the valuation point that you set originally or that you no longer find appealing. It needs a secondary market. So it swings all the way back round to the trading platform, to the exchange again. In 2007, the world's markets went through MiFID I and decided that the exchanges had a monopoly over data, over trading, so they encouraged MTFs, SOs, SIs to come into the marketplace. Now, if you want to trade 50,000 Vodafone, you can probably do it in around about 50-plus venues at any one time. So competition isn't a bad thing. It's what the regulator insisted upon 10 years ago. Okay, quite a lot happens since then, but nonetheless, that's what they insisted upon for traditional assets. So new entrants into the market space is on all phases of that life cycle are imperative as we go forward. I think 2019, as my fellow panelists have all agreed, is going to be a big year. But it's got to be a meaningful year. It can't be what we saw in 2017 and just have big numbers flashing everywhere. It's got to be quality, not quantity.
Great. I think we're more or less out of time. Do we have time for questions, or do we need to move on to the next... Right. Okay. Well, thank you to each of you as panelists. Very interesting topic, very interesting discussion, lots of great perspectives and insights. And I think it's clear that what we're seeing is the creation of a lot of structure and discipline, which I think is going to provide longevity and stability and a lot of momentum. So thank you all for your comments, and we'll pass it back to you.
Thank you very much.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that discussion. I found it extremely insightful. I think that the panelists had some really great views, and I think it was interesting to bring the collaboration that it had between the different viewpoints and the different kind of industry backgrounds as well to really bring together the most value possible. So listen, with that in mind, that's a wrap. I've got to bounce. Thank you so much for your time and attention. As always, if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. You know it makes sense. That's a wrap, and I've got to bounce.